G'day, this is Mark Pesce, and welcome to This Week in Startups Australia. Across 12 years, This Week in Startups Australia has charted the growth of Australia's startup ecosystem and beyond. We started with very little investment available to startups. That changed. Australia has billion-plus venture capital funds, seed stage funds, angel funds. Is it enough? Is it working? Is it easy to find funding, or at least as easy it was before the current round of higher inflation-adjusted returns for many classes of investments? Those are the questions we'll be asking in our end-of-year investor special, Show Me the Money, on this episode of This Week in Startups Australia. We're going to dive right into the current state of play of startup investing at the end of 2025. To do that, we've got two amazingly qualified individuals to join us. Cheryl Mack is the founder of Aussie Angels, a platform that connects angel investors with startups seeking funding. Welcome back to Twista, Cheryl.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Joining Cheryl is Jellix Ventures founder and CEO, Andrea Gardner. With placements in 44 startups, Andrea knows her way around a deal memo. Welcome back, Andrea.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right. We have not done one of these specials for 3 years. Huge amounts have happened. The investing landscape is completely different. Startup investing has basically been on a bit of a roller coaster over these last 3 years. Can each of you, from your own points of view, break down what the last 3 years has been like? Is it all about inflation and interest rates, or are there other forces at work here? Who'd like to go first? Cheryl?
I know that's a big ask to ask us to break down what the last 3 years have been like. I can't even remember what happened 3 days ago, but I do know that a lot happened in the last 3 years. So let's hold on. 3 years. So it's the end of 2025. So 3 years ago would have been the end of 2022. Am I doing that math right?
Just when inflation started to kick up properly in Australia and the RBA decided it needed to do things.
That was like the end of the ZIRP era, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Andrea, you got any?
Yeah. Just about inflation and interest rates, absolutely they've contributed. But I do think that the market is recalibrating after, you know, a decade of cheap capital. And I think it's forcing founders and in particular investors back to some of the fundamentals and a lot more disciplined investing. Investors are looking for much more disciplined utilization of capital and, you know, and just look at going back to those fundamentals of unit economics, market size, all that sort of stuff. And for Jellix, I think it is quite positive. I think the seed stage funding cap has widened. And that's where Jellix kind of operates. And I think that's, you know, what we think we're good at is investing at that stage. Our deal flow really doesn't seem to have abated. And that's great, obviously. You know, strong companies are still raising. They're often raising on more realistic terms. I think valuations have... Look, at one stage there, they just went through the roof. It was crazy. You know, like towards the end of COVID, you had all these US investors were suddenly kind of flooding our market here because they found that they could... It was actually quite easy if you're going to invest over Zoom, you know, getting to know people, you could equally do it in Australia. And so some of the valuations started going through the roof a bit, you know, and that makes it hard for investors. And I think there's still a bit of a legacy of that with some founders. I think some founders still have these really unrealistic expectations on the valuation of their companies, given where they're at.
I think that's come back though. Like that definitely disappeared in 2023 and 2024. I feel like in the last 6 months, I've seen a lot more of that come back.
Oh, absolutely. I think there are founders that come in and realize that the market has changed, but there are some that still come in and that, yeah, at least that's my experience.
So did you guys not slow down during 2023? Like we saw a lot of funds nearly stop deploying in 2023 and a lot less deals.
Not really, though, not for us actually, because yeah, it was less, but it wasn't a really significant slowdown for us. I mean, there's still that kind of, it's still hard to get that, get capital at that stage. And a lot of, like, as there are a lot of companies that were not raising, they were putting it off. So I
Yeah,
think
we
there are
saw that as
less.
well.
But, the quality companies are still raising and they're still successfully raising. And they, yeah, has had things in, I think things have improved a bit since then, since like 23.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, we saw this huge correction, right, in 2022, 2023. Like,
Yep.
there was so much uncertainty. I mean, on our side at the really early stage, we saw angels writing less checks. We saw angels writing half the, like, their check sizes halved. But in the last year, that like 2025, we've absolutely seen a rebound. We've seen more deals. We've seen more people writing checks. We've seen those check sizes increase again. I mean, I think part of that is bolstered by AI, but I don't think it's the entire thing.
Okay, so what else is it? I mean, what's the vibe? If the vibe isn't AI, what is it?
I think
I think it's
one
a
of
bit
the
of
things.
stabilization, right? Like, interest rates have stabilized, inflation has stabilized. The like cost of living crisis isn't so much of a like it's imminently a crisis that we're all going to peril, and more of like, okay, this is the new reality. Let's recalibrate.
I think your point about it being this is the new reality is an important part of it in that. I think ge the geopolitical situation really frightened a lot of investors, and they just wanted to sit on their hands, keep their hands in, or keep their hands in their pocket and not invest until they saw how things panned out. How's the election of Trump going to impact, like not just economics in the US, but economics here. So I think there was just so much uncertainty that. There was a broad spread attitude of let's wait and see. And I think people are feeling, at least they know where the lie of the land is now. And I think to me, that's probably a lot of what's driving, say, the earlier stage, say, angel investors and maybe LPs investing into funds. But maybe the smaller funds, I'm not sort of talking really about, the bigger funds with the later stage investors because the institutional investors. They know there are cycles and they keep investing anyway.
So,
But they're
yeah,
not
although
the
they
one.
haven't deployed to any new fund managers, sorry, since Zerpira.
I think that I suspect, I don't know, I suspect that a lot of that is about, the venture industry is still fairly, it's still fairly immature here and there hasn't been a lot of time for. We're coming up to around our decade, or we are around the sort of decade. I think we've had one or two actually close out, but that's not very many. And I suspect, a lot of people say to me, "Oh, well, look, we're just overexposed to venture. We want to see how it works. We haven't actually had any returns yet." And I think that's sort of slowing down deployment into, institutional investors' deployment into funds. And a lot of them have, they've got the big brands and the big logos that they're not going to get in trouble if they don't go haywire. But big enterprises get in trouble if they take risk on the smaller managers or smaller logos, and it doesn't go well.
So I have a question. Since we experienced this burp when things weren't getting funded, I don't know what else to call it, indigestion. Did either of you, so Cheryl, did you see either angel level startups and did you see sort of seed level startups that disappeared beneath the waves because they simply were unable to raise capital?
Yeah. Yeah, a bunch of our portfolio companies died during this time, but like debatable as to whether they would have died anyway.
Yeah.
I arguably they died sooner than like they probably still would have died regardless. Maybe they died a year earlier because if there was free money, they might have been able to raise one more round and then realize that they didn't actually have product market fit or scalability or whatever it is. But like I think that's part of the model.
So it was like, a mercy killing, like, is what you're saying.
Yeah. It's not like I'm like, oh no, look at all these companies in my portfolio that died. I'm like, oh, cool. Yeah. I mean, that's expected.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think it just accelerated the death of the ones that probably were not going to last anyway. And that's probably better for everybody because it's not wasting more money, time and effort, you know, on the part of the founders and everybody. So I actually think there's an upside of that, to be honest.
All right. There's.
Yeah. I also got my write-off sooner as well.
Oh, you're cruel. There are two things that I've heard recently at very high-powered dinners in Sydney with investor types. And the first one, and I want you to both comment on these. First one, someone said to me, in all honesty, Mark, if it's not AI, it's not getting funded.
Look, I think, you know, AI is a major tailwind. But what do they mean by AI?
Yeah.
You know, the amount of decks that come in, oh, we're an AI company. All they're doing is using AI as a tool. And it's like the internet. If you weren't going to use the internet as a tool, you're going to not be competitive and be left dead in the water. And I think it's the same with AI. It's, you know, we have, you know, everyone needs to use it as a tool to be competitive. But that's different from a true AI business. You know, the sort of building the models and all, you know. And I do think investing in those is, you know, I think that's a very attractive option. I think strong business with strong fundamentals are still an attractive option, I think. But I don't think it's only AI. I do think, you know, climate change management, renewables, that type of thing is still, you know, defensible, deep technology, all those sorts of things. I think there's lots of good opportunities there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I put things into three buckets, which is like AI native, true AI company, a tech company with AI sprinkled in, and then non-AI. And there are companies getting funded in all three of those buckets. I think the difference is the quantum, the valuation, and the speed at which they're getting funded.
Okay, so that brings me to my second question, which is, if people are writing checks now to fund companies, what's the differential between an AI company and a non-AI company in terms of the speed and the check size? Is there, in other words, is there an AI premium right now?
I would say absolutely yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you, Cheryl.
Yeah, but like you say, like it's a bad thing. Everyone is doing this. Like, I think smarter people than me are also paying more for AI companies at the moment. And we all kind of seem to be basing this on this theory that like these companies are going to be worth more in the long run. So if that pans out, then the premium is justified. Yeah. Now, of course, that's a big if, right? And who knows what's going to happen in the future. And some other AI company may come along and completely decimate some of the AI companies we're funding. But that is the risk of investing in ultra high risk asset classes.
All right. Has the game changed for you as investors? Now that we've come out of the burp and coming back to a different but similar market, has your strategy changed? Has your approach changed at all? And again, I'm asking you to take a look at those last 3 years. Now that we seem to be back on track again, what's different?
I think something changed for us, I think, over COVID, actually, when, you know, some of these, you know, big muscle boys came in and started doing things that we weren't used to, like we'd be the first investor or maybe done one or two rounds, and then they come in and they've got the huge brand value and a huge ability to help in a way that we can't. And they're like, right, to the founder, if you want us big boys that are going to sort of really stroke your ego, and potentially really help you in a really genuine way as well, you need to let your existing investors know that we're taking the whole round and they have to relinquish their follow-on rights. And that happened to us. It was pretty unpleasant, and then it was more of a shock and more deeply unpleasant when, one of the big funds managers here, one of the biggest funds managers here, did the same thing. And that was particularly hard because, for us it was a fairly, for us it was a reasonable size check, and for them it was just pixie dust. And it was not necessary. And that was disappointing because that's probably one of the very few times that I've experienced kind of not very nice playing in the sandpit. Usually that's one of the things I really value about working in the ecosystem here, is that people generally play very nicely in the sandpit, and that's really, it's a good ecosystem to work
Yeah.
in.
On the other hand, people have
It is
long
a good
memories.
ecosystem. Sorry.
Sorry, Cheryl.
It is a good ecosystem. I think we've cultivated something really special here, that there's a healthy level of competition, but also a decent amount of collaboration. I haven't seen that as much. Like, that absolutely happened a number of times during that free money era, where we were getting squeezed out of deals. It completely dropped off. And right, I run a syndicate, so I'm never leading around. I'm never taking the largest check. I'm usually 200 to 300K out of a minimum $1 million deal. So that, if anything, during 23 to 24 to even the first half of this year, we were seeing that, founders really valued that, and so did other VCs, because they weren't taking the whole round anyway, and they just wanted that extra support for the founder. Probably in the last 6 months, I've seen more of this, oh, there's not as much room in the round, starting to get squeezed out, but not nearly as bad as during that ZIRP era.
I think that it's also partly, the earlier you are in that investment stack, the more people write smaller checks because they're riskier checks, and the more all the investors and everyone's dependent on that collaboration, and it's really important. But when you go up the line and you get, more sort of Series A and B, A for us is kind of, that's a big check for us usually. That's when it starts getting more competitive, I think. And then B's and C's, and it gets increasingly competitive, I think. Because they don't need, they, you know, they've, it's, you know, larger funds managers have, they need to write huge checks, because otherwise the size of their team would be enormous if they had a team the size of ours. The same ratio of the team size to FUM.
All right, so question for both of you. And I am not asking you to pick your favorite child, but I am asking you to talk about a startup that you've recently funded that you like, that gives you a sense. I call it the spidey sense, but a sense of what's coming. Like, which startup, and you saw it and you said, okay, we need to throw these people money because they have nailed the future.
Well, I really like Scienta. It's the founder, Yakar, is pretty impressive, like a really clever academic from ANU's physics department. We've invested in quite a few businesses that have come out of there. And they're kind of working on this sort of small, when we first invested, it was kind of about 3D printing microchips. Now it's kind of more this, they call it additive manufacturing, which utilizes electrochemistry to manufacture small electronics, sensors, batteries, all that sort of stuff. I think that sort of really kind of deep tech investing in manufacturing's kind of got a big future. This is if we're setting aside, obviously, the big tailwind from true AI. But I also think that we've invested in I think one of the other things, sort of a smaller one, but one I'm excited about is VXB and the whole sort of space industry. I think that's got an exciting future. It's pretty nascent industry, but it's pretty exciting. I mean, I get excited about so many of them. I could just rattle on forever.
Cheryl?
Yeah, I mean, if you weren't investing, if you weren't excited, you wouldn't be investing, right? So I always, yeah, I get that question like, oh, what's your favorite portfolio company? And I'm like you can't ask me to pick a favorite child. So I always go to the most recent one. But I do think that it like answers your question a little bit in terms of like what's the future we're going to see. So recently invested in a legal tech company that most legal tech companies are like either trying to replace legal or trying to like make one area of legal more efficient. How they're doing it is actually trying to support behavior, which is users, business users in this case, are using AI to try to do their jobs or the job of someone else for them, right? So a business owner goes to ChatGPT and says, make me a contract for this new supplier. And then they're like, cool, I've made this contract, but I don't actually know if it's that good or not. But I'm sure it's pretty much all the way there. Let me just send it to my lawyer and they'll just review it quickly and give me the tick off, right?
Work
And of
slop,
course,
work slop a warning, work slop warning.
exactly, right? But the future we're going to see is like, this is kind of to answer your question is like, we have to account for a future where the average person is asking AI to do most of the job for them. So a powering that dynamic rather than trying to prevent it, I think, is part of the future.
What's the name of the startup?
And so it's a company, actually, maybe I shouldn't mention them because we haven't quite closed the round.
Oh,
So
okay. All
I'm going
right.
to keep that one to myself.
All right. Very good. Okay. Final question. Predictions for 2026. Will it be an up year or something else? Andrea, why don't you start us off?
I think that there will be sort of continuing rationalization of valuations. I think that that appetite for deep tech, climate tech, AI infrastructure will grow. And I think a lot of investors will be really interested in those areas. I suspect actually that an IPO, generally we have, it's been more kind of acquisition by private companies have been the source of exits. And I don't know, I suspect that the IPO window may open up a
Well,
little,
Canva is expected to go public next year, so that's certainly going to be part of it.
Yeah, and it will certainly just increase the profile of the stock exchanges around the world as being, an option for startups. And what else? I don't know. I suppose I still am a great believer in, the high risk, high return asset class that seed investing is. I mean, I still do it for the same reasons, and I will continue to do it for the same reasons that one, you can make. There is the potential to make great returns provided you take a portfolio approach and manage the risks as best as one can. But the exciting thing is that investing early in some of these companies, it's great for Australia and the economy. We, ultimately these are the, some of these companies are going to make the world better, and it's really exciting to be part of that. And without a pipeline, there's nothing for the big VCs and PEs to invest in. And I do think there's been a bit of an eye taken off that ball that, Cheryl's business supporting seed investors is so critical for that pipeline. And I think equally, early stage venture capital funds like our business is also really critical. And those are the two sort of stages that, capital's much harder to get. The institutional investors have poured lots into the big venture capital funds managers, but that doesn't really trickle down very well to that really high risk early stage where the checks are small, and they're spread widely.
Yeah,
Sharon? 100% agree. All of that, I think we are going to see things go up in the sense that, like, there will be more deals. There will be a greater quantum of venture capital funding in this country in the next calendar year. I agree also that we're probably going to continue to see this, like, stabilization and just, like, evening out of things, but probably still, like, steady growth, right? Because we've seen these cycles before, right? Sentiment builds. It drops, there's a correction. We're in this like sentiment build phase, in my opinion. So this like sentiment building's like consistent going up and to the right, I think is a really good thing.
And you've just given us the name of this episode. Cheryl, Andrea, thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful holiday, and we'll see you in 2026. With the end of the zero interest rate era, the startup funding ecosystem changed fundamentally. And for 3 years or so, that completely broke things. But it feels as though now, as we exit 2025, the changes that have been made are bedded down. And what has emerged is, in fact, an investment community that's functioning more rationally, that's looking for returns in more reasonable sorts of ways. And that is flowing through to every aspect of how startups get funded and how they grow. So, Cheryl is looking for certain kinds of businesses with certain kinds of plans. Andrea is looking for a different sort of plan from a business that's bigger than what Cheryl will see. But they're both looking for strong fundamentals. That is, they have product market fit, they have customers, and they have revenues. And if you can bring those to an investor and tell them a good story about why this will only get better from here, that's what they need. They don't need any fancy AI. They don't need any tricks. All they need are solid fundamentals and a good story. You give them that, and your startup will find the money it needs. Thanks to Cheryl Mack and Andrea Gardner for joining us on this episode. We've got decades of great stories from founders on our website at twistartupsaus.com. It's got everything. It's got all the shows, all the interviews, all the photos, all the links to all the stories. So check it out at twistartupsaus.com. We'll be back next week with the series final, reviewing the latest findings from the Startup Muster Report, a snapshot showing whether the community is thriving or needs some help. If you like this show, please follow us in your favorite podcasting app so you can stay up to date with everything that's happening in Australia's startup ecosystem. And if you're interested in becoming a sponsor for This Week in Startups Australia, please drop us a note at the website at twistartupsaus.com. Until next week, this is Mark Pesce thanking you for listening.